More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, everybody, to the Buck Sexton Show. We have our friend Ned Ryan with us. He is the founder and CEO of American Majority. We're going to talk to Ned about the state of play going into the 2024 election, how we're doing with the tactics of getting votes in the places we need them, when we need them there, how we're doing on the messaging battle, and just how he's feeling about politics in general right now. We've got a lot of things to talk to Mr. Ned about. Sir, always good to see you, my friend.
Tell me this.
What is your biggest concern right now? I'm not asking about a primary candidate or anything else. For the GOP heading into the Biden reelection effort right now, trying to oppose him, what's your biggest point of concern? What makes you think, guys, we got to wake up here?
I think the first thing, Buck, as soon as I saw the Biden, you know, announcement for reelection, right now, if you were to ask me, who do I put as the odds on favorite to win reelection? It's Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. As horrifying as that thought is, that we have Grandpa Dementia and Harpy Harris as the nominees running for reelection right now in April of 2023, I have to tell you, I would give them the nod because I think the Democrats are far better at collecting ballots than Republicans are. And I think we're kind of getting caught up, a little spun up about, is it Trump? Is it DeSantis? I have to tell you, and I'm saying this in some ways a little bit to kind of grab people's attention, I don't care who the nominee is. I really don't, because I think we're getting lost in that. First of all, we should focus on the fact that we're going to have an America First candidate as the Republican nominee in 2024. Rejoice in that fact. But we had better figure out how we become better at our ballot collecting machine. And Buck, I've been hammering on this for a while. In fact, American Majority has made it one of our main focuses for training starting in January of this year, in which we are trying to communicate to the grassroots, to candidates, to those, anybody that will listen, really explaining what I think took place over the last couple election cycles where Democrats have realized it's not really about votes. It's not persuading people. It's about how do we collect ballots, more ballots than they do, than Republicans. And I've explained to the grassroots, the good news is we do actually have a model on what we should be doing in every presidential battleground state, and it's called Florida. And let me explain a little bit about what Florida has done very, very well, especially over the last 5 years, the Republican Party in Florida, to give people hope, but to also highlight what we should be doing. Over the last 5 years, the Republican Party in Florida went from being down over 250,000 voter registrations to Democrats to now being up 450,000. That's a 700,000 swing in 5 years. How did that happen? Because they committed about 2 to 3 million a year over the last 5 years and said, we're going to go and build out our voter base. Now we're up 700,000 swing, up 450,000. Buck, I have to tell you, because of some of that, I don't think Florida is a battleground state next year. But the other aspect of what Florida has done very well for, I would say, 6-7 election cycles, they've actually committed to an absentee ballot chase program over the last 6 weeks of the general elections, where they've put at least 10 million in. They've pursued the 1.1 to 1.3 Republican absentee ballots in the state to get 80 to 90% return. This is something that the Republican Party kind of used to do fairly well in other states, but has really let fall off. And I think one of the things, Buck, that really highlights how badly it has fallen off is Arizona in 2022. In which just over 1 million absentee ballots were requested by Republicans, only 650,000 were returned, or roughly 65%. If you had 80% of absentee ballots returned in Arizona, you would have won Secretary of State, you would have won the governor, you would have won Senate, you would have won the Attorney General, you would have won everything, and quite frankly, very definitively. But nobody took the time to actually fund an absentee ballot chase program in Arizona, That's why you actually lost every statewide. And so my message right now is don't get caught up in the Trump-DeSantis fight in the primary. Focus on the fundamentals of how we're going to actually implement absentee ballot chase programs in Arizona, in Nevada, in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Georgia, North Carolina. And if we don't figure that one out, Buck, I think we're just having kind of really nice conversations about who the nominee might be, who will actually lose to Joe Biden.
Is the DNC smarter than the RNC? I mean, is their machinery just more efficient and better functioning than ours?
The fact of the matter is, since Obama and Organizing for America, the DNC is really just a legal kind of functional mechanism organization in which most of the political power on the left, on the Democrat side, doesn't really run through the DNC. They've gone and kind of branched out into other things that have done a lot of this absentee ballot chase program really well. In fact, someone's told me, I have not been able to independently confirm this, Buck, but I've heard that outside groups in Arizona plowed about 20 to 30 million into absentee ballot chase programs alone in Arizona. All outside groups, right? Not state party, not the DNC. Most of that being outside groups. I think
I want to learn this too, right? I mean, you look at this stuff, and I think for everybody listening, it's important. We say like outside groups, right? I mean, take us into the machinery here a little bit of, if you say the DNC is just kind of a thing that's there, almost like a figurehead for what I always refer to as the Democrat apparatus. Where are the centers of power? Like, what actually matters for Democrats to win elections? And I mean, in terms of the electoral tactics and get out the vote effort, you know what I mean? Like, who's making that happen for them?
I mean, part of it is that the candidates themselves, the campaigns themselves, have figured this out. I mean, think about the fact, Buck, really quick. Josh Shapiro in Pennsylvania didn't debate once in the gubernatorial race. Katie Hobbs in Arizona didn't debate once in the Arizona gubernatorial race. Why is that? Because Democrats have figured out it's really not about persuasion. It's not about persuading people to vote for you. It's about understanding, have we seeded the field with enough absentee ballots, with enough ballot requests for us to go out and be able to collect them? And what they've done, Buck, is they have gone in and they've gotten a lot of their low propensity voters. And just so people who are listening understand, most times you rank voters one out of four being a presidential general only election type voter, 4 out of 4 being they show up at every primary, they vote in spring elections, they vote in the general. What Democrats have done very, very well on the left is they've gone out and they've realized we need to get our low propensity voters to actually request a ballot. So then we know we've actually pushed out a ton of ballots into the universe. Then we know where they're at, and we're now going to collect all of those ballots because we know this person has a ballot. We're going to harass them either through phone calls, peer-to-peer texts, door knocks to get them to return that ballot. We as Republicans have not done that. In Florida, we've done it fairly well. We've done kind of the push. We've pushed people to get ballots, and then we've pulled them in. We've chased them. We had better figure out those strategies pretty quick. And I have to tell you, I just do not see the RNC having, first of all, I'm going to be pretty rude here, the basic intelligence, the desire, the willingness and ability to actually do a robust absentee ballot chase and call it 5 to 6 presidential battleground states. So I think it's incumbent upon outside groups, and obviously American Majority Action, or C4, is working with some groups to say, regardless of what the RNC figures out, regardless of what a presidential campaign might figure out or a state GOP, we have to make sure we facilitate maybe 3, 4, 5 presidential battleground state absentee ballot chase programs in a very robust way. And I've told the other folks that are involved, it has to probably start at 10 million over the last 4 to 6 weeks whenever the ballots drop in a specific state.
Now, is it fair to say that, you know, you work, you know, as CEO of American Majority, you're doing the ground pounding work of elections for Republicans, the GOP, conservatism, etc. Are you completely
center right?
Are you outgunned at least just by the sheer number and financing of the other side? I couldn't even. Yeah, I had a feeling. Like, give me a sense of that scale.
Not even close.
It just feels like everywhere I look, there's another organization that's doing the bidding of the left, and not all of them are funded by Soros. Obviously, a lot of them are, and I wonder, like, where did all this come from?
Well, I have to tell you, in fact, my new op-ed for American Greatness, where I write them, is probably going to be a little brutal on think tanks I think the right needs to really examine what they're doing with a lot of their nonprofit money. The left has been very sophisticated with how they spend C3 and C4 money. This is a dynamic I think we need to look at, where the left is fixated on doing everything they can to achieve political power. They have this obsession and lust with political power. We on the right are wandering about, I'm even saying conning fiddles while the Republic burns, that we're spending so much money on think tanks and white papers that we need to start focusing on, you know, 2 to 3 million a year in voter registration to these states, battleground states. And we need to figure out how we're doing no less than 10 million into absentee ballot chase. The left is far more sophisticated than we are right now in how they spend their nonprofit money. And again, if you want to talk about, yeah, are we outgunned? Are we overwhelmed? Again, I don't know how they did this legally, but Mark Zuckerberg with Center for Tech and Civic Life dropping in 400 plus million into presidential battleground states, into blue counties to boost the blue vote. I mean, that's just one example. It's obviously a significant one. But you realize the left is plowing a lot of money into these outside groups to be used in a very effective way. And whether, if it's not voter registration, if it's not some of this other stuff, they're doing lawfare, they're doing investigative journalism, they're doing FOIA requests, they're doing a lot of different things to throw sand into the gears of anybody on the right that might be trying to do effective work. So we got to figure out how we use our nonprofit money much, much better. And until we do, we're going to be outgunned. And sadly, Buck, I think outgunned pretty significantly.
So I think that's such an important point about the Zuckerbucks issue. You know, people will refer to this. What actually happened there? I know it was $400 million and I know it was to help Democrats, but so they're able to use tax advantage dollars, right? I assume these are, these are tax advantage, tax deductible dollars that I know Mark Zuckerberg, you know, has got so much money, he doesn't care, but still to pick and choose. Like, we're just doing basically, if you just chose to do a get out the vote effort in the city of Philadelphia, well, guess what? You're going to help Pennsylvania go pretty blue, right? And that's, so they're able to keep it nonpartisan. So it's tax advantage, but it's really not nonpartisan because where you're harvesting the votes are Democrat strongholds, right? Is that basically the formula? Yeah. Like, how did it work?
Yeah. Well, it really was. And Center for Tech and Civic Life was actually being run by some alumni from the New Organizing Institute, who, quite frankly, I always admired for their pretty highly skilled tactics and strategy. And they started Center for Tech and Civic Life and persuaded Zuckerberg to do this. I mean, it's not rocket science, Buck. You know that in, there are certain places, like you just said, if they're heavily urban areas, the odds are it's going to vote a certain way. Hey, let's go in and maybe put $10 per voter into that county or that area versus maybe $1 for a red county. And we're just going to help facilitate the vote, put some drop boxes in. But it got to the point, like in Green Bay, where Center for Tech and Civic Life essentially took over the machinery, the local machinery for how elections were conducted. They went in and were extremely aggressive and actually said, this is how the elections are going to be conducted if you're going to take our grant money, and we're actually going to facilitate how it operates. I still am stunned, again, not stunned, Buck, because I know a lot of the machinery of this vast bureaucracy, whether it's at state, local, or even the federal level, they're not on our side. But it is pretty staggering that we allowed a billionaire to go in and through a nonprofit essentially take over the election process and that entire process in these battleground states. And nobody said, hey, should we have a conversation about this on a serious level? And we're just kind of like, it is what it is.
And I want to ask you,
I'm telling you right now, to their credit, a lot of Republican legislators have outlawed Zuckbucks where they have the political power to do so. But I'm telling you, Buck, the left is never asleep. They're never going to stop and go, oh, well, you beat us on that one. I guess we're just going to have to take a break. I've made this point on Laura Ingraham's show, but look at what they're doing in Minnesota. They've done motor voter laws. They're now pre-registering 16 and 17-year-olds. And they're also proposing pop-up polling locations. And the easiest way to explain that is, you know, someone in a county can request, hey, we'd like to have a pop-up polling location in an advantageous place for, say, a rest home or a college campus. Think of it as a drop box on steroids. I mean, the left is always aggressively trying to pursue how do we get political power and then how do we hold on to it? And we on the right, a lot of people are just wandering about, you know, having black tie affairs and popping off fireworks over the Potomac to celebrate their existence, but not achievement.
It's a little discouraging. And unfortunately, if we're going to talk about Joe Biden here in a second and what we face with him, I don't think it's going to be happy talk. But Ned, just give me a moment for our sponsor here. MyPillow. We love all the MyPillow products, right? I've got the Geezy Dream Sheets on my bed right now. They're phenomenal. You got to try Geezy Dream Sheets. You know, you might obviously already have sheets, but guess what? You need to change them every couple of years. So get yourself a new pair of sheets. Right now, the Geezy Dream Sheets for MyPillow coming in as low as $29.98 when you use promo code BUCK. It is time to update your sheets. Remember, these Geezy Dream Sheets come from the Giza region of Egypt, which is where the world's best, softest cotton is grown. And they're ultra soft and breathable sheets, but very durable. You're going to love them. The best sheets I've ever owned. Get yourself a couple of pairs. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. You get 8 weeks of every night sleeping on these sheets to make sure your purchase is amazing. Go to MyPillow.com, click on Radio Listener Specials, check out the flash sale on the Giza Dream Sheets. Remember, use my name as the promo code BUCK. When you go to MyPillow.com, get the Giza Dream Sheets, promo code BUCK, or call 800-792-3269. That's 800-792-3269. All right, Ned. So this I think sometimes this makes people, and even in some of my beloved audience, frustrated with me because I end up having to tell them, yeah, Joe Biden is a clown. He was not smart even 40 years ago. And we go down all the list. Correct. He wears aviators to cover up his face so that people don't realize he's so vacant and old and decrepit and the whole thing, right? I point all this stuff. I get it. He's probably going to win unless we figure out a few things. And this is what I try to tell everybody. Yeah. Democrats don't care. They don't care that he is a decrepit buffoon and he's quasi-senile, if not fully senile, right? He's the brand. Yeah. And their brand apparatus is very powerful, and they're going to run democracy is going to die if the Republican, probably Trump, ends up being the nominee on our side. And that may swing enough independents who are just, did you see the poll that said they're all exhausted, by the way? That's the biggest thing that people are thinking about now, that there's exhaustion, not good for our side.
No. I'm kind of looking at what I'm doing right now, 18 months out from the general elections in November of 2024, of kind of ringing the bell a little bit and going, you think that we're up against, you know, Grandpa Dementia and Harvey Harris. These guys are idiots. They are. But again, understand what's taking place. It's not even about Biden and Kamala Harris and all of their supposed, attributes, which are very limited on so many different levels. It's about them being used as vehicles to achieve and to retain political power. So quite frankly, do not be distracted by that and think, well, there's no way we can lose to these chumps. Yes, you can, because they are focused on the machinery and the functional aspects that we just discussed of we're going to collect more ballots than the other guys, and we're going to invest enough money to do so. But the other thing too, Buck, I'm working on a new book. Hopefully it's going to come out this year. But it's called American Leviathan, and it really is about the administrative state. But understand that we're up against not only the Democratic Party, the left, the corporate propagandists. We are up against the administrative state, and they want to see somebody that's an ally to the administrative state win. So we're up against very powerful forces. We should not underestimate that. That should hopefully sober us up a bit and hopefully focus us on what we should be doing over the next 18 months, because it's going to be a battle royale. If you think that somehow administrative actors, state actors, are going to simply go, oh, yeah, you know, Joe Biden's all washed up, I guess we're just going to have to watch Donald Trump take the White House back. No, they view him as an existential threat. They view him as it's such an incredible threat to the premise that the administrative state is legitimate. They're going to do everything that they can to make sure that Joe Biden is able to waltz back into the White House. So that they can actually continue doing the actual real governing of this country and use Joe Biden as kind of a front man.
You think that the plan is to push Biden through with every trick in the book in 2024 and then at some point have Kamala take over, and therefore Kamala gets to be the first black female vice president. Obviously, this will be the Democrat Party touting the massive achievement they're in without ever facing voters.
I don't think he's going to be able to get away with as much as he did in 2020 in the COVID era, where he could stay in the basement and have the corporate propagandists essentially run his campaign for him and do all the messaging for him. I think they're going to do that again, though. I think they're going to use that playbook again. I think the whole Russian disinformation, Hunter Biden laptop, ploy, they'll probably try and pull that one out again and do something along those lines. Yeah, I think there's going to be a whole host of things. We've seen them pull out their playbook before. I think they're going to use a lot of those same tricks. And I think the corporate propagandists are going to be on steroids next year to try and make sure that Donald Trump or whoever the nominee is does not take the White House back. Because I don't know if you guys have noticed, Donald Trump is making it very clear recently, even, the Schedule F, I'm going to go in, I'm going to reclassify some of these government employees, thousands of them, and then I'm going to fire them. He's making it very clear. He plans to go to war with the administrative state. They know that. They view him as an existential threat. So whatever confidence you might feel in running against Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, please don't be overconfident. I feel like I was overconfident last year in 2022. I'm never going to make that same mistake again.
I feel, just to be fair, I feel exactly the same way. I thought, how is it possible? What a disaster Biden is, and the Democrats are so insane that go look at what college educated voters in particular did in places like Arizona and Nevada and Pennsylvania, and what they said in the polling, which is just, threat to democracy. They believe some of the, pro-abortion propaganda, and they don't like Trump, and end of story. Right. And you sit here, you go, whoa, what about crime in cities? What about a wide open border? What about inflation?
They're very good at the propaganda. The thing, though, and I don't want to be too much of a Debbie Downer for your listeners. Like, I want them to have some hope.
I know you're usually a happy guy, by the way. Like, you're an upbeat, optimistic guy. Yeah, but keep going.
So just so you know, there's 144,000 more registered Republicans in Arizona than Democrats. You should be able to win that in 2024 if you do the right things. Even in Minnesota, I was just up there trained a couple hundred people on absentee ballot chase, ballot out, ballot in. And I made the point, if you guys had actually been able to do something like this last fall in a state like Minnesota and collected just about 22,000 rural absentee ballots that we knew were all going to go break for Republican, you would have won the state auditor's race and you would have beaten Keith Ellison in the attorney general's race. The numbers are there. It can be done. So I want to give people hope in knowing, hey, if you do the right things, we could actually have some pretty good victories next year. But simply hoping, simply wishing for that is not going to actually get it done. We're going to have to be seriously focused on, and this is what I'm doing, raising money to make sure that we're doing the voter registration, working on doing absentee ballot chase. It's going to take a lot of hard work, and a lot of people are going to have to actually buy into that philosophy on our side. And the good news is, Buck, wherever I've gone out and trained on this year, I'd say 99% of people agreeing, saying, we need to do this. We're going to commit to it, and we're going to do everything that we can to make sure this happens in our state. So I'm optimistic if we do the right things, we can win. But there's a lot of ground, a lot of things that need to be done between April of 2023 and actually achieving that next fall in 2024. So we got a lot of work to do, but it can be done.
Ned, when we come back, can I ask you to tell everybody about, you're a Virginian. You've been on the forefront of some of the political battles there, including some of the school issues. Glenn Youngkin, haven't heard much in a while. Yeah. I want a full Ned report card on Youngkin. And also, I want a Ned report card on how the campaign, not really Trump, is doing. Right. So, I know it's all tied together, but it's doing so far. We'll get to that in a second. But first, let's do this the right way, folks. Set yourself up this spring to have your full energy potential. Chalk can help. This company provides an all-natural supplement that's helping people restore their energy potential every day. It's a supplement formulated to restore low testosterone levels in men to their previous levels. Our diets and stress are just not good for T levels. Chalk's leading ingredient in their male vitality stack has been proven to restore 20% of the lower levels in just 3 months' time. You'll feel the positive effects and experience an energy potential like you haven't in years. Chalk produces their products with a high level of purity. This makes it the most potent and impactful it can be. The Male Vitality Stack, super effective. Sign yourself up so you can check out Chalk's Male Vitality Stack or any of their other products, by the way. They have a Female Vitality Stack, too. So for ladies out there, you might really love your Chalk. Get 35% off any Chalk subscription for life when you use my name at the website, Chalk. That's C-H-O-Q, Chalk.com. Again, Chalk.com. Make sure you use my name at checkout, Buck, for 35% off. That's Chalk. CHOQ.com. All right, let's start with Youngkin. I was all excited. I was on the for Virginians. I was certainly given high fives for Youngkin's big, big win, and we needed a little bit of a boost after 2020. And how's he done, Ned? I mean, is he a possible presidential contender? I haven't heard anything about that.
I don't think he's going to run in 2024. I think he's pretty realistic that right now you've got two heavyweights. I would argue one super heavyweight with Trump and another heavyweight with DeSantis, and the polls reflect that. And quite frankly, Youngkin's been doing a really good job in here, Virginia, especially considering he doesn't have the state Senate. He's got the House of Delegates, 52-48 majority. He doesn't have the state Senate, but he's been able to achieve some good things on a host of fronts. And he and Jason Meares and Winsome Sears have been doing as best they can without having the full political power needed to achieve some of these policy goals. But Glenn Youngkin right now, and I think this might be part of the reason, Buck, that he's kind of foregoing a presidential. I want to remind people, this year in Virginia, we have every state Senate race and we have every House of Delegate race. And if Glenn Youngkin wants to be able to have that last year of his governorship to achieve some policy things, he's going to actually need to have the state Senate, and it's going to be a battle royale. The maps are going to be really tough, Buck. For us to get to a 2020 tie, right now it's 21-19, actually 22-18. For us to get to a 2020 tie, for Winsome to have the tie-breaking vote is going to be an incredible achievement. It's going to be very hard. So I think Glenn's focused on that. We're going to be focused as well on maybe adding a seat or two to the House of Delegates majority. But if you were to ask me, and I haven't talked to him, I don't really have that connection with Youngkin, but if I were to guess, I would say he's going to be putting a lot of time and resources into trying to keep the majority in the House of Delegates, hopefully get to at least a 2020 tie in the state Senate so he can have 1 year to really achieve some of these policy goals that he really wants to achieve.
So far, I mean, it sounds to me like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, what's the letter grade?
Oh, I would say, given what he's been able to do, there have been a couple maybe I would quibble with. I'd give him a solid A-.
I was going to say it sounds A- or B-plus territory,
yeah.
So that's good.
I was going to say for somebody who is in what is most assuredly a purple state, he's been doing a really good job on what he has the ability to do. Let's put it that way. So yeah. I think Glenn Youngkin has a future in Republican politics. I don't think it's 2024, but maybe it's after that.
Is Virginia in play for a Republican in 2024?
Maybe. And the reason I say that, Buck, is...
Ned, but keep going.
Well, I mean, think about it. Glenn Youngkin really... I mean, he had Terry McAuliffe throw him all kinds of gifts coming down the home stretch. A lot of people really woke up those last 30, 40 days and said, we can win Virginia. Youngkin only won by, what, about 2 points? So... even then, we kind of caught them by surprise. I think there's going to be, like, kind of goes back to, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, if the work is done to actually do voter registration and absentee ballot chase in Virginia, which is a little harder than some other states because we don't register by party in Virginia. If we do those things, I have every reason to believe that we can make Virginia really competitive in 2024, but it's, are we going to invest the time and money into the functional aspects that will make it...
It sounds like the Virginia GOP then is in a maybe better than average play, because like from what I understand from my Pennsylvania friends, for example, the Democrat machine in Pennsylvania is just kicking the ass of the Republican machine in Pennsylvania in every possible way, have them outplayed, outfunded, outthought. And I'm like, guys, it's kind of a big deal, right? This isn't like Rhode Island. You know, this is Pennsylvania. It's an important battleground state. Yeah. If Virginia is in a little better, like, how would you gauge that?
Yeah. Does that sound like really confident? Yeah-ish. I mean, yes, because of Glenn Youngkin. But you have to understand, most state parties have no funding. They have no ability to actually perform a lot of these things. I mean, I would say I'm a fan of the Virginia GOP folks. I think they're doing the best they can, considering their limited finances. But this is of some concern. If we're not going to have really strong state GOPs, we better figure out outside groups that are going to be very robustly funded to be able to do some of those functions. So yeah, I think it's doing fine. I would give it definitely not as good a grade as Glenn Youngkin, but it's hanging in there. It's a very hard job, Buck, to run a state GOP in many parts, thanks to McCain-Feingold. But it's really hard to do and do it effectively. And I would argue probably of the 50 state GOPs, there's maybe 10 that are actually well enough funded to do effective work.
Wow. Well, let's come back in a second, Ned, to how the Trump campaign is doing thus far and what your thoughts are about how that's shaking out. But first, I want to talk about the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. Tunnel to Towers Foundation was born from the tragedy of 9/11 and has been honoring America's heroes ever since. The foundation honors fallen and severely injured heroes and their families with mortgage-free homes. This year alone, hundreds of Gold Star and fallen first responder families with young children and our nation's most severely injured veterans and first responders are receiving homes. More than 500 homeless veterans received housing and services last year, and more than 1,500 are receiving housing and services this year. And this coming Memorial Day, all the brave men and women lost since 9/11 in the War on Terror are having their names read aloud in a Tunnel to Towers ceremony. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Please help America to never forget its greatest heroes. Join me in donating $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2t.org. All right, Ned, Trump campaign at this early stage. How's it looking? Who's doing what? What do they need to change? What are they doing well?
I think they've got some of the right people on board, Buck. Obviously, Susie Wiles is really running the show for Trump. You know, Susie and I had our differences, to be honest, about the RNC chair race. I was essentially running Harmeet Dhillon's whip team. The Trump campaign, the Trump folks were behind Ronna, getting her reelected, getting her slate, trying to get them elected. The other two lost. It is what it is. Still a big fan of Susie's. Because I think what's the important thing that people need to understand about what Trump has done, Susie Wiles and her Florida team that ran the absentee ballot chase program that know exactly what they're doing on that front are essentially running the Trump campaign. And so that should give people hope that the people that know how to do the functional ballot chase voter registration that made Florida successful, they are essentially running the field operations and a lot of the campaign aspects of the Trump campaign. I think one of the interesting dynamics that I'm looking at in the Trump campaign, I think he's going to be successful. I do not think there can be a lot of big donors behind Trump. It's going to be Trump and the small dollars donor base against some of the donor class in the primary. I give the nod to Donald Trump that he's going to be able to pull it out. And I think some of the donor class will come back to him in the general, or they'll fund outside groups that will be a benefit to him. You know, I have to tell you, I think the Trump campaign is doing everything that it needs to do right now. They know they're the front runner. They know that they are really that 800-pound gorilla. And quite frankly, Donald Trump knows how to use that power and that ability to go after who he perceives to be some of his biggest opponents. And I think he's been extremely effective if you look at the poll numbers. So it's not over yet, but, you know, there are a lot of good things that are actually happening with the Trump campaign.
Who do we have to win in order to win the White House in 2024 that we didn't in 2020, right? I mean, that's where that would be
suburban
different.
Women.
If it's, see, okay, but so it's interesting. I talked to Ryan Gradusky about this recently too, and I like to ask the people who know, right? Because this is like when I was in the CIA, you know, you get the smartest analysts you can in a room. You ask them three of them the same question, you're going to get three variations. They're going to be rooted in the reality, but three variations of what they think or, you know, what they assess. Yeah. And I sit here, I'm just like, how, Ned, does Trump win suburban women? I mean, in all honesty, I asked the question because
So what did Ryan say, by the way?
Oh, you don't want to know what Ryan said. No chance. Ryan said it's totally screwed.
So, I think there's some ways. Obviously, Donald Trump is it's a hard sell to suburban white women. I think there's a couple things that he's going to have to do that he can do. One, he's going to have to find a vice presidential candidate that appeals to them. I'm proposing Kim Reynolds, the governor of Iowa.
She's excellent.
She's excellent. A lot of people have called her the Ron DeSantis of the Midwest. I mean, so people can kind of have that perspective. She's very good. I think that would mitigate some of that for Trump. I think he's going to go after some of these issues that appeal to suburban moms. I think the transgender issue, if I'm being honest, in women's sports and high school women's sports can help him. So I think there's some. It's going to be a tough sell, Buck. I mean, I think we've got to be realistic. It's going to be a hard sell. So then the question becomes, how do you build out your voter base? How do you get enough ballots out there to maybe overcome some of that? Because, you know, it's going to be a hard sell on those battleground states to those suburban white women. It is. We should be realistic about it. So how do we mitigate that? And how do we overcome it?
More Than a Movie is back with season 2 of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Junie. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What about white working class voters who came over for Trump in 2016 and may have sat out in 2020? Even, you know, I've seen some data to suggest that they didn't necessarily go Biden, but there were some stay homes. And look, this, we're speaking in very broad terms, but right. You know, the America First message of changing the way we do trade with particularly China, but just in general, and bringing back manufacturing, you know, in Rust Belt states, that really seemed to resonate. I don't know. Yep. It doesn't seem to me that resonated the same way in 2020. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, again, I haven't looked. I couldn't tell you the numbers off the top of my head, but I know there were a lot of people that voted Obama in 2012, voted Trump in 2016 in that upper Rust Belt. I think it comes down to... I'm sounding like a broken record, Buck.
Let me guess. People. Get ballot chase and getting the votes out. And
get a ballot. Like, this is the thing. Like, I'm telling you, this can be done if we can get to these people and say, I need you to request a ballot. Or the other thing, too, that I'm also training people on is, please get it out of your head that election day is the only aspect of election season. Here in Virginia, we start voting 6 weeks out. So you need to start voting at the beginning of election season, not on election day, because if you really like your candidate, you're going to literally save them four times the money that they're going to spend if you don't vote early on texts, calls, door knocks. Yeah, it's one of those things where the outreach was not what it should have been. This is why I was so frustrated about the RNC race, to be completely honest, Buck, in January. The RNC was miserable, failed completely on the voter outreach that it should have done, could have done. And if some of those components are not there and you're not as focused as you should be, this is what happens. People that should be your voters stay home because you haven't hit them enough times to get them to the polls. So I have to tell you, if we are not firing on all cylinders next year in regards to outreach, registration, ballot request, election season, yeah, we're up against it. It can be done, but boy, now you're really getting me frustrated about the RNC and those folks that are running it. But, you know, I'm going to ignore them and we're going to do the best we can without them.
You've been talking about these things. I just think it's interesting to hear about. I think people are curious. Like we say, do ballot chase. Like how does this actually work? Like if I put you in charge of getting the absentee ballot thing done in, like Wisconsin, right? That'll be an important state. How does that work? What do you do?
So I'll use Virginia as an example since
we're doing some of that this year. You know Virginia super well.
But just to explain a little bit. So you can request a ballot, an absentee ballot up to 12 days before the election, right? So what we're going to be doing is getting people we're going to push them to request a ballot all the way up until the deadline. We know that.
How do you push them? I really want this like stuff. Like how do you put, what are you doing? Are you sending out emails? Hey guys, register for an absentee.
Yeah. Oh, well, no, we'll find the people that have either been traditional ballot requesters or people that we'll actually model that we think are potential, and we'll mail them. We'll probably mail them a ballot, absentee ballot request form in some of the state senate races we're in to get that form into their hands, to encourage them. You need to fill this out and send it in. Once they get it in the mail, we'll probably follow up with a peer-to-peer text. We'll probably follow up with a phone call. The idea being we want to expand our universe of ballots to get them in there. And then once they're in the greater universe, we know where they're at, right? We know that somebody at this address has a ballot, and it literally becomes a series of harassments, Buck. I mean, that it's not rocket science. As soon as you know who's requested a ballot, where they're at, you call them, you text them, you knock on the door. Here in Virginia, we can actually ballot harvest. I fully intend to, within all legal limits, be able to do that. And we will do that. So it becomes a series of harassments to say, we want your ballot. You have a ballot. Let's return that ballot. And let's get it in before, you know, the deadline. So
what are the, like, for Virginia, I know it's different state to state, but ballot harvesting, can you just, can you have somebody, you know, who works for American Majority? Can you have somebody just go to, like, a big apartment
churches
block?
Churches were harvesting here.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. The churches were actually harvesting here.
Churches were harvesting.
Buck.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, it's one of those things that I want to have a conversation with some of these churches and go, hey, it's legal. You can do it. We should be doing it. By all means, legal. Where it has been decided in a state, this is a legal approach to actually how you vote and collect ballots. We should do everything. Yeah, you can. I mean, Buck, how do you think we have the House of Representatives in what otherwise was a absolutely complete miserable year? California Republicans and New York Republicans decided, hey, it's legal to harvest. It's legal to do all these things. We're going to actually do all of that. That's in many ways why we have the U.S. House of Representatives, because California and New York Republicans decided these are the rules of the game. We're going to play the game by these rules. There you go. I am going to hopefully, and we'll see, and again, this is what I hope to do, get as many churches as possible to actually ballot harvest here in Virginia.
Very interesting. Well, Ned, please save the country and help us win the next election, okay? Can you work on that?
I'm trying, man. It is going to be hard, and I hope that enough people understand we got a lot of hard work. It can be done. The Republic's in the balance, Buck, and that's why I'm so focused on this stuff between now and 2024. Let's put in the hard work. Let's see if we got a shot at restoring the Republic, because that's what's really at stake in 2024.
People want to help out at American Majority. Where should they go?
Go to AmericanMajority.org. That's our website. You can request a training. You can become involved with us. They can always follow me on Twitter, at Ned Ryan. They can see some of the stuff I'm pushing out and talking about. So AmericanMajority.org is a great place for them to check out with all the resources and how they can engage with us.
Ned Ryan, one of the best in the business. Sir, thank you so much for hanging out. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Buck.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.